Nature's first green is gold, her hardest hue to hold. Her early leaf's a flower, but only so for an hour. Then leaf subsides to leaf, so Eden sank to grief. So dawn goes down to day, nothing gold can stay. Robert Frost.
Brain Soda.
It's the Brain Soda Podcast. I, as always, am your host, Kyle, joined by my co-host and cohort, Brad.
How's it going?
Today, we're going to be talking about model organisms. But first, Brad.
Yes, Kyle.
I want to talk to you about Glory. Not the Civil War film with Matthew Broderick.
Okay. Like fame and glory? That. Like going out in like the Coliseum? Is there like Faded Glory? Like a food? Isn't that like a clothing brand or something like that?
Like if you lost it and then you're like, oh, I can't. Where's my glory at?
Yeah.
Because today we're going to be talking about Newfound Glory.
Okay. So I'll admit, we talked about this a little bit before, and I'm not familiar with this band, but I'm ready to be enlightened.
Well, right, and to be fair, I don't want you to feel intimidated or anything like that. As a matter of fact, I think it's probably for the better, maybe, for this segment, that you don't.
Exactly.
Like Fist of the North Star, going in blind is going to be something I feel like that, you know, kind of giving you the core principle of what this subject is. Is going to make or break how you feel about it and maybe if you'll pursue it. But for our listeners at home, The same thing goes. And regardless, we're going to kind of give you a breakdown of that overall for this segment.
Well, right? Yeah, and I mean, and most of the stuff I talk about, you're not too familiar with. I mean,
absolutely
not. So,
it's,
yeah.
Yeah, it's very much kind of one-sided, unfortunately. Sorry for that, but...
It's always interesting, but yeah, go on. Sorry.
Absolutely, no, and I appreciate that, but... We're going to start our story today in late 1996, originally called A Newfound Glory. This band was founded in Coral Springs, Florida. It is easycore or happy hardcore.
Easycore?
It is essentially pop punk. So Green Day, Blink 182, right? Those are most typical bands associated, but with breakdown. So... Not solos, but sections of like heavy rhythmic punk or more specifically hardcore punk sections of songs, right?
So, okay. I was not expecting you to go that way because you said easycore and then you're like, and then they had breakdowns. So I was thinking they were going to get like go the emo way or something like that, you know?
Right. Right. Not emotional breakdown.
Like they're like rocking and they're like, but actually, I'm really.
Right.
Yeah. But all right, cool. All right. Interesting.
To give that a little bit of a disambiguation as well. Like easycore is kind of a tongue-in-cheek name genre, but like it's something that they threw up on a shirt at one point and like it kind of followed through with bands like All Time Low, The Story So Far, A Day to Remember. Things like that, right? In 1996, they are just a random collection of guys in Florida working theme parks and Red Lobsters.
Did they grow up in Florida?
Yeah.
Or so they're all Florida men?
These are pretty cool, ethical dudes. And this band starts out as a five-piece. Now, there's three original like founding members with Ian, the bass player, Jordan, the lead singer, and Steve, the rhythm guitar, as we know.
And when did they start? Like, how old were they?
I really didn't look up their ages or anything like that. But this is like 96, right? We, when covering music, have made the annotation of, you know, this is post-1991. This is post-Nevermind, the grunge era, Nirvana coming into the scene of mainstream pop culture, right? But this... As in story, obviously, fits in that bubble as well. But there's another album, genre, you know, year, landmark event that is really important to this story. I'm going to ask you now, Brad, do you know what any of those may be? Pop punk is obviously the genre, right? But the band, the album, the year.
Sublime?
They would be affected by this, but no.
I don't know then. No.
1994's Dookie by Green Day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, is like really the launching pad. And I have it down here that like, I think they're more categorized as being skate punk. And I think it's fitting why. But bands like The Offspring, NOFX, Bad Religion, and a lot of other bands that are already producing music, in some examples for over 10 years in the punk scene, Rancid, you know, these guys are producing some of their best stuff around this point in time, 94, 95, and they're getting mainstream radio play and exposure, Sublime as well, because of Dookie and, you know, Green Day, in that not Nirvana mold, but the same kind of landmark moment, this album within this year by this artist.
Yeah, right? they were like a defining band for sure. Like Green Day kind of changed. Right. Yeah, like exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, not one for one, but I feel relatively close. But this story is really pick up in the afterbirth of that, because I feel like for a large part, a lot of that music has kind of not faded into obscurity, but a little bit out of favor. I believe by this point, you know, Green Day is probably coming out with like the Brain Stew album and stuff like that, like getting a little edgier in their presentation and things like that. But, you know, these guys are looking to harder, heavier music, and they're going to go the opposite way. They're looking to make music like Green Day. And a lot of their inspirations are Gorilla Biscuits and, you know, Madball and these like kind of edgy hardcore bands, right? Like, I find it really cool that like one of the early 80s hardcore bands has a song called Attitude, and it's about positive mental attitude. And this band, I feel like, is a really definitive trait of being a positive, optimistic musical act, but not being overly corny. Although there's a lot of like heartfelt emotional lyrics, you know, a lot of them about young love and stuff like that too. They're not overly corny, but they are kind of positive and optimistic. And that's one of the big reasons why I've always enjoyed this band. They're our subject matter today, and I'm really excited to present it to you. With that, they recruit a guy named Taco Joe for their drummer, and a guy from a band named Shai Hulud, which some of you may know to be the Sandworms from Dune, Chad Gilbert. Now, Chad Gilbert will go on to be their lead guitarist and kind of primary musical composer overall, and the backing vocalist for the band. This rounds them out.
So he's like, do they still tour and stuff?
Yeah, they do. I think a lot less, and we'll get into that when we get into the pandemic era of this band at the very, very end of this. But okay. Yes, to answer your question straightforward, yes, absolutely. But this, I think, is what makes Newfound Glory like sonically what it is, right? Like when we get to a couple years from now and you look at their peers, it is the second wave of pop punk. And it also is, you know, kind of low-key a sleeper hardcore punk band, right? Like, they are very much on the lighter side of that. But when we get into their later works and some of the ways that this frenetic energy spills out, you know, in your ear, it really fits. So this iteration of the band goes out and records the EP, It's All About the Girls, right? And it's very much kind of tin can recording, right? These guys were working, again, like we said, like service jobs to be able to fund this recording.
Okay, so this is, they're not even big yet, you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely not. Oh,
okay, okay.
Shai Hulud had a small following in the hardcore scene.
Okay.
And Chad, when he entered that band, was like 14 years old. So to answer your question about age, they're all like in high school or
after graduating, and stuff like that.
So from there, they've been touring around the Florida area and stuff like that, and playing around with these different shows and garnering a little bit of an audience. And that leads them into signing with an independent punk label, Eulogy Records. And they swapped out a drummer in Cyrus. They record Nothing Gold Can Stay, you know, a play on the Robert Frost poem, which we read at the beginning in the cold open. And this is kind of what makes this band. this will get them signed to Drive Through, who has ties to MCA and gets them their first major label deal. But like, for a lot of people, this is the album. This is the landmark album. And it's funny too, because like, when you look again at like their kind of eclectic inspirations within the punk scene and stuff like that, like the Get Up Kids, the band actually was named originally A Newfound Glory based on a newfound interest in Massachusetts, the Get Up Kids song. And, you know, yeah, I think it lends credence to like how diverse this band is, who it's going to end up affecting and who it kind of plays to overall. Because in a short period of time, Brad, these guys get on MCA, right? So they're on a major label. But this is 99 that this record comes out. And Anna is their big kind of hit lead single for that release of Hit or Miss. This will get re-recorded and re-released with the self-titled debut through MCA. And like, you can tell they put so much stock into it. They get Corey Feldman for the indie video. And the reason why I bought this record and fell in love with it was Hit or Miss. But in the music video for it, the one that I saw, the one that aired on MTV, that guest star was Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, really?
As like their tour manager or whatever, yeah.
Back when he was like Even Stevens.
Way then. Back. Yeah. Way back. Yeah, I don't even know if I had even really seen Even Stevens yet. Wow. I had to have, right? Yeah. And it's a cool, funny little video. But by this time, when you look at their peers, who I'm going to list right now, they're some of the biggest rock bands going, especially in that field, but just of the day, right? Bands like Blink-182, Sum 41, Simple Plan, Good Charlotte, right? Like, these guys are hitting MTV and TRL at the time when you were getting Korn and Britney Spears and Eminem or DMX or NSYNC in any given episode. Like, for all the faults that MTV had within that time period, like, it really was an amazing time to be a fan of popular music, right? Like, I feel.
Yeah, they really did push music at that time. Like, I don't even know if there's any music at all on the channel anymore.
Right. It's pretty much all reality television at this point, right?
Yeah.
But so I feel like when you look at that list of immediate competition in your peers, right? Like, that's a tall order. Like, there's a point in time in which Blink-182 kind of ruled the world musically almost. Like, same with Simple Plan. Although forgettable snapshots in time to some people, especially if that's not your wheelhouse of music, which for a lot of people, it's absolutely not going to be, right? But like, for a lot of kids out there, it was. For a lot of, you know, young Christian men, women, it was. For a lot of just teenage skateboard kids, it was.
So when you say young Christian men, are they like a Christian band?
They are not. But at this point, there's bands like MXPX, there's Tooth and Nail Records. I mean, there is a Christian punk-like contingent. It can kind of fit. If you go to a hardcore show and you play a Newfound Glory song, I don't think you're going to get a lot of...
Even the name sounds almost Christian-y.
It very much does. And yeah. I understand that, right? But to kind of move along from that, though, right? Like, I feel like it's really cool to see a band with some, like, legit punk cred and a positive message, right? Like, it is a cool thing to see. And I feel like it's nice to know that.
That is, yeah.
You could go to the skate rink and play it. You could meet up with some kids after Sunday Mass and play it. You could meet up with some kids at a hardcore show and play it. You know what I mean?
Like, I mean, well, because you don't see positive music really much through any genre of music. I mean, you do, but like, a lot of it's like about heartbreak or, you know, rough time.
They fit that as well.
Sure.
Like pop, well, pop, I mean, and that's music, kind of music. Right.
You want to generate emotions, right? But like, I do like uplifting music too.
And all stories rely on struggle to be compelling.
Exactly. Sure. Sure. But like, right. I mean, you know, I get down on some like, you know, lift me up music too, man. I do like that type of. I do.
Right. And mind you, I think one of the things that really helps with that is the gang vocals. A direct inspiration of hardcore is when you have all five members of the band, you know, kind of chorus chanting.
Okay. Like Queen? Well, they just kind of sing.
I'm talking about their gang vocals and them all doing that together. What you're talking about with Queen is more like harmonizing.
Yes. Okay.
And it's not bad. Okay. While that is appealing and it is more like melodic, this is not that. There is a melody there, but it is five dudes in the band all singing along together. And like, again, you know, when you're in a hardcore band, they call it gang vocals for a reason, right? Like, you know.
Multiple people singing to me has always been, like, really cool. Like, it's always been, like, very well, amazing. Right. It always appeals to my
ear. It gives you that, like, pirate ship feeling, doesn't it? Like, camaraderie and, like, a very uplift. And that is one of the things I'm saying is that, like, when Queen does it, it's so they all kind of pitch and sound together and give you that orchestral kind of effect, right? Like, that's not the intent here. The intent is, like, we're all behind what he's saying. We're all in this together. You know what I mean? Like, and that is a beautiful message in and of itself, even if it is...
Okay, so he's, like, saying something, and then they're like, or something like that.
Well, they're all saying it with him. Gotcha, right, exactly. Gotcha. But when you're talking about the lyrical content, then, in the exchange that they're putting that out there, it does hit in that level.
Gets the people going.
Like that. And, like, it does, though. No. But honestly, it's with that mind that I feel like we need to look at them, right? And although they never really reached the level of financial success and record sales or maybe exposure, even though they were featured on MTV and TRL and things like that pretty regularly, right? These guys go on to inspire bands like Fall Out Boy, A Day to Remember, All Time Low, The Story So Far, and many, many others. I feel like that's why we're covering them. Maybe you weren't the biggest fan, Brad, but Blink 182, like I said, for a moment in time, was one of the biggest bands. It's actually around this time.
Oh, right? Yeah, I was a Blink 182 fan for sure. But, like, I mean,
right,
not to the extent where I was like, I'm going to go out, I'm going to buy their CD, try to see them in concert and all that. You know, like, I just, yeah.
Or I'm going to listen to three other adjacent bands. Exactly. Quite similar in Newfound Glory. Yep. Simple Plan, Good Charlotte, like, you're not probably going to, and even I didn't do that. I owned, out of those five bands, I owned three of these albums. Right? Okay. I owned two Blink 182 albums, the first Sum 41 album, the first Newfound Glory album, right? So, like, I did that, but to be fair, I feel like if we're talking about a body of work, there's a reason why we're going to talk about these guys. And, you know, that first big record, that first big indie record leading into it, there's a fun gap there where they came out with this vinyl called From the Screen to Your Stereo. It came out on Drive Thru. It was an EP full of covers that appeared on movie soundtracks.
Really? Okay.
And it's a staple now kind of their career because they're going to have different releases for it in 2007 and the latest one in 2019. And I just love them. I really do. And if you don't ever really want to check out this band wholesale for what it does musically, those I feel like are fair suggestions for anybody not terribly open to this genre of music, right? But with that second album for a major label artist can often result in disaster, right? They call it the sophomore.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask about that earlier. Like, I mean, because, yeah, I it is so true, man. And you're like, what you've talked about in other artists. Yeah.
Like, you have an entire lifetime to write your first album, and then you have 6 months to write its sequel, right? Like, there's a reason why bands kind of falter, artists in general. I don't want to just make it about rock bands, but there's a reason why many falter here. And with Sticks and Stones, this 2002 effort for them, they're going to see their biggest success chart-wise because the album before, they get to 15 on Billboard's Heat Seekers chart, right? And with My Friends Over You, I feel like, you know, Hit or Miss was a snapshot for them. My Friends Over You, it's a snapshot of, this is our most successful album today. I think some could argue their best album overall.
Their second one?
Yeah, Sticks and Stones. Technically, it's their third full length, but whatever. We're talking second major label release, right? I think some people could argue that's their best album or whatever else. But My Friends Over You, on that recording process, was written at the very last moment, like the 11th hour. And it goes on to be maybe their most defining song, right? the music video, the way that this song incorporates little elements of hardcore in a largely pop punk, you know, kind of breakup anthem that I really do still love. But with that, because of the comparisons that they're getting at this point, because mind you, like, this pop punk wave is really kind of permeating through so much of pop culture. And you can see it in things like punk, the way that celebrities and teenagers of the day are dressing and things like that, that like they're touring with Blink 182. They're on the Warped Tour. They're out on the Honda Civic Tour with Good Charlotte and Simple Plan, right? But this comparison to all these bands actually really starts to aggravate the band a little bit to a certain extent because of the roots that they have in hardcore and things like that, right?
Yeah.
This leads to the 2004 album Catalyst, in which its opening track intro is an under minute long song and is an anthemic kind of like statement about the mission statement of the band and how they kind of separate themselves and view themselves as artists, right? And literally some of the first lyrics are, it's more than a t-shirt, it's more than a tattoo, right?
Yeah.
And this is maybe some of the heaviest that you've ever heard Jordan sing, or maybe we'll ever hear him sing overall, right?
And is it like the kind of the kamikaze, Eminem's kamikaze to there?
I will say Catalyst has a bit more of an edge and a bite to it, especially considering the releases previous to it as well, right? But it also has moments that are kind of introspective and things like that within it. Songs like Truth of My Youth and things like that, right? Like, I think Catalyst is a really cool album, and okay, it still did really well for them. Then we move on to Coming Home. And around this point, they've kind of made the move to more adult contemporary stuff, right? This is about 2006. So with a more mature tone, they also kind of incorporate some synths. Now, you obviously had a lot of people kind of chanting from the back of the room that they were sellouts. And I will admit, out of anything in their discography, although I find this to be a solid album, there's like 2 to 3 songs on this thing at max that I can really vouch for, right? Hold My Hand and
really,
It's Not Your Fault. Yeah. It is more of a regular alternative rock album, and there's nothing wrong
exactly
with that.
You're
especially
right.
Especially when you just did an album and you went harder and more towards your roots to say, we're different than a lot of these other bands, right? And by this point, Blink is not going to end up being a band releasing regular music anymore. I think Simple Plan kind of falls off around this point. And Good Charlotte co-opts the next big wave of alternative rock that comes around, which will be emo. But we're going to get into that in a moment. But that kind of shift also isn't really atypical for a band like Newfound Glory, because with a lot of like the initial punks and stuff like that, like with age, with time, you know, these kind of like erratic anthems mellowed out and kind of tapered into more structured songwriting, right? Like just naturally.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting older, you know, like when you get older, your music, your lyrics change, like because you draw stuff from your life and stuff, you know. Yeah.
Oh, even with just being more thoughtful about it, right? Like when you're 17, 18 and you just want to do punk songs and
exactly
be like all your punk, and now you've been making music for 4 years or whatever it is, like you're going to want to do something a little bit different than the same thing you've done for 3 albums. You know, 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to, too.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah. So by this time, music had really actually quite significantly shifted, right? You got to think, this is only about a 5-year span, but from 99 to 2006.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
So like, much change.
Especially just in that one genre, right? And almost directly, it could be argued, because of Newfound Glory. As an example, when Pete Wentz, the bassist and like main songwriting force,
whence he came,
I don't know whence he came. Well, Chicagoland area is whence he came from.
Sorry, I just had to get that. Yeah.
Anyway, when he came up to his producer to kind of, you know, start the process of them recording one of the albums that broke them for major labels, and he was asked what sound they were going for, he was handed the first two Newfound Glory records.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
is it though? I mean, okay, I guess Fallout, early Fallout. Like, because like now they're just like, I don't know.
Fallout Boy in circa 2006 is one of the big three of emo.
Yeah, it is emo, I guess.
Within that time, I mean, not only were they originally getting outsold by their peers, but now they've kind of definitely been outsold by bands like My Chemical Romance and Fallout Boy come 2006, right? And this is really the end of their major label stints. They had been switched over to Geffen for two album deal, and by this point, Geffen releases a greatest hits record for them. They come out with their second From the Screen to Your Stereo album, and honestly, it really does kind of feel like they're fading into obscurity. So when 2009 comes around, and Not Without a Fight is the name of their album, it kind of seems like an apt title. They had signed to Epitaph Records, although this is a success for them. Gilbert kind of goes on to say that in regards to the reactions that Coming Home got, he kind of kept himself in a punk song pigeonhole, right? Like not really wanting to kind of spread out too far with his writing. And in 2011, Radio Surgery comes out. And again, another kind of critical success, a return to form in a lot of people's eyes because it's a bit more of a happy, energetic, fast-paced Newfound Glory record, but it's 2011. And although they're having success and continuing to grow and keep their fan base they've garnered, right? Before 2014, we have one of the kind of worst things I think that could happen to a band that's been around for this long. Because by this point, they've been making music for 10 years. They had gone out on tour and celebrate the 10th anniversary of their self-titled major label debut. And rhythm guitarist, founding member, the guy who was inspired to name the band originally. But accusations came out about Steve and having inappropriate contact with a minor.
Oh, and, okay. Yeah, me too.
Right. And let's just be honest about it, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's obviously bad.
Yeah. It's not me too as much as like women saying, yeah, me too. That happened to me too, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just easier to like, I mean, I don't know. I hate the word canceled because like
right.
The Me Too'd, I mean, it's a, I guess a PG way of saying that you're a piece of I guess, you know, to me, yeah.
Or more that things were uncovered about you. And I think the thing is that like, look, because these accusations are always so personal, right? Even if they're not like with a deep, intimate, significant other or past relationship, they're with someone who you've had a very private, intimate relationship with, or at least accused to. And to be honest, like these things come out about big celebrities, and because there are always people who will want to defend and love celebrities, they will attach themselves to their defense. And like, to be fair, there will always be people who are willing to make baseless claims against them as well.
Sure. And like, exactly. I mean, and not to defend celebrities and what they do at all, but like,
not at all.
Their lives are completely different from a normal person's lives. You know, people like throw themselves at them all the time, but like, that's not to excuse behavior.
No, not at all.
Yeah. They're not, that's not to excuse their behavior at all, but like, it's just,
I don't know. I didn't look it up. I don't, the only thing I know is that he was convicted in 21. Okay. So it took a long time to get any one thing to stick to him.
Sure.
But I will say this, like it could have happened countless times for all that we know. What we do know is that once the word was out, Newfound Glory, its remaining members didn't just distance themselves. They kind of just continued on without him.
Good. Yeah.
Even kind of remarking in the song The Worst Person, in which they say, can't believe you were hooking up with girls in Boston, right? Like a real shot kind of called there. And that's in 2014. And Resurrection, I feel, if 2009 is an apt title and Not Without a Fight, Resurrection may as well have been the band's new name, right? Because, like, this is one of the better albums I feel like they've ever came out with in this new era for them. Because
they found a new found glory.
You know, I would definitely believe that is apt as well, right? But, yeah, I mean, definitely, because Hopeless sees them, like, you know, on a new label, reinvigorated, even being a four piece. And the hits kind of keep coming with that, because after that they do Makes Me Sick in 2017. And this one is a little bit more experimental because they kind of bring some synths in again and they mess around with like some island feels, right? Some steel drums and things like that. And it's a really cool kind of fun record.
Nice.
Then in 2019, we get the release of From the Screen to Your Stereo 3 and Forever and Ever Times Infinity in 2021. And
okay.
And, you know, it's got some good songs on it. I found it to be enjoyable when I listened to it. And I think many people would as well. But unfortunately, Chad was found unresponsive in bed, rushed into emergency surgery. They found cancer on his back and in his lungs. And it's been reported, at least, that, you know, he's been cleared and then they found it again. And he's been through intensive chemotherapy. And at last report, you know, he's optimistic, has bright spirits. Again, that kind of PMA. And I'm pulling for Chad. You know, we talked about how they inspired A Day to Remember, and I think you can see that in, you know, from 2008 to 2015, he had this really cool string of production credits with brands like Terror and H2O, but he produces Homesick, What Separates Me From You, and Common Courtesy. I would argue the greatest era in A Day to Remember, kind of consecutively, right? I think you could definitely argue he directly inspired that music, directly, you know, worked on those works in general. And, like, it's such a good band. I definitely suggest it for all of you guys out there.
Yeah, no, like, definitely. I need to check them out. Because, like, I don't listen to too much 90s music besides, like, maybe Eminem, if that. And, like, I need to explore more.
Like, early 2000s.
Even that, too, you know, like, because, like, that time period really is, like,
right, right.
Like, very influential to what music is now. You know, and especially punk and stuff like that. I do, like, my wife really gets into a lot of punk stuff. And some of the stuff, you know, I'll tap my foot, right, too, and stuff, you know. It's usually not my thing. But
I do, definitely. I think it's one of those kind of unsung bands that, like, especially for somebody like you who, like, sits on the fence. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's a couple rock songs I like. There's a couple rock bands I like. This might be exactly one of those bands for you. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not, and that's totally fine, obviously, right? I don't have a gun.
Yeah, and like you said, like, I mean, like, they are really influential to so many other bands, and, like, it's a good example of a punk band, kind of like a model, you know, a model band, kind of like Model Organisms, which we're going to get into here. And so, when I say Model Organism, what do you think of?
So, I kind of hate saying Missing Link, and I know that's a big tis-tis-poo-poo for you, right? And rightfully so. But it does kind of make me think of, like, lowest common denominator, right? Like, base organisms, model organisms, I guess, in my mind, are base organisms, right? Things that are at its core level, you know, what other things are modeling themselves off of as they evolve.
A little bit. Yeah, kind of in a way. Yeah, sure. Okay. Like, I mean, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's more to define it. I would say it's non-human species that have been studied extensively and lead to a better understanding of a biological process, particularly those related to humans, right? So, yes, it is like what a base, like a lot of what a base, like, bacteria is, or what a base, you know, plant is, or something like this. But really, like, what makes them special is that they're super good for studying, for, like, doing research on and things like that. You know, they usually grow really quick, or, you know, they have, like, very easily identifiable genes or organs or things like that. And, like, because of that, you know, if you were to take biology in college, like, you just see these organisms over and over and over and over and over again because of, like, oh, yeah, this shows that, you know? And I had to show them because soon we're going to go over evolution, right? And I wanted to do a few other subjects before evolution to kind of give a basis, you know, on it. Like, we've talked about, like, the
like a shorthand, right?
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the things dealing with evolution, kind of some of these things are used to study that process, right? So, yeah, I have about 10 of them. Actually, I think 11 total. But it ranges from everything between, you know, a single-celled bacteria all the way up to complex amphibians and reptiles and things like that. So let's get into it. We'll go from, like, the most basic ones to the most advanced, I guess, in a way. You know, I guess they're not, like, exactly the most basic to the most advanced, but...
Roughly, right.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to start with the bacteria that probably, if people know what a bacteria is... You know what this is, and I'm going to let you guess what that is, Kyle. What do you think it is?
Oh, E. coli.
Yep, there you go. E. coli, or I always get this word messed up, Escherichia coli. That's what the E stands for.
Okay.
That's why everybody calls it E. coli. It's one of the most studied organisms in the world. It's a gram-negative, rod-shaped bacteria, and it's commonly found in the gut of many animals, including us, right? So it's commonly researched because it can show, like, dirtiness of areas. And actually in my job, I look for that a lot, you know, because if you have E. coli in somewhere, that means there's some kind of, usually in somewhere, poop is coming in contact with that, or okay, something that's coming in contact with poop is coming in contact with that down the line in some way, you know.
Right, there's some sort of transference for fecal.
Exactly, right. Yeah, yeah, which can lead to other things, more dangerous things, because E. coli is not really that dangerous, right? Like I said, it's in our gut. But because of its rapid growth, though, and thus its life cycle, it's commonly studied to learn mostly about evolution and genetics, right? And a lot of other things, like it's been used to, like, genetically alter it, too. But through its life cycles and everything, you can literally see evolution take place within, like, days or weeks, right? It's insane to think.
Is that because, like, the life cycle that it has?
Exactly.
Or it's just, okay.
Yeah, like, it grows so quickly. Like, it can double within, I think, a couple hours, right? And by double, I mean that one turns into two, that two turns into four, that four turns into, you know, eight. But it's also used, like I said, in biotechnology, where they've altered it to be able to break down things like oil and plastic. So you hear about these sometimes in the news where, like, oh, you know, this bacteria has been developed to break down the oil slicks or oil spills out in the oceans and stuff like that.
Super E. coli for oil.
That's yeah, crazy. It kind of is, you know. Yeah, it is. It's
I really mean, cool. But for real though, like, for whatever conspiracy theorists wanted to say about Wuhan and things like that, like, there is a reason why we look at and investigate different diseases, bacterias, and things like that. It's not always necessarily to weaponize or whatever may have you, right?
Exactly.
Like with E. coli, in that exact example, like, it's not just the bacteria, right? It's something that you have an applicational use for.
Yes, though. What else is there? Exactly. Yeah, you can use this bacteria to study other things, right? So there's this tool called recombinant DNA, where they kind of, like, change the DNA structure of an organism. And they do that within the cells of E. coli, or the cell. And
right.
By doing that, they can express certain traits. By expressing those traits, we can study things like common diseases or illnesses or different crop diseases or even fighting things like climate change, right? So this E. coli is, like, so important. It really is. Like, I mean, just naturally, it's so important to us in our guts, but also it's so important to us and studying. You know, that's why it's the model organism for bacteria, right? It's just, right. It's so, like, it's ubiquitous in its studying. If you were to search E. coli on Google Scholar, you'd get, like, 2 billion results or something, I'm sure.
Yeah. Right, because there's so many use it, right?
Yeah. Another one, which is used not just in studying, but it's also commonly used, like, throughout industries, is something called Saccharomyces cerevisiae. And that is also known commonly as baker's yeast.
Okay, I was going to say it sounds super familiar, but I cannot tell you what that is.
So obviously it's used for baking, right? It's used to make bread and stuff, but it's also used to make wine and to make beer. So anything fermenting pretty much with yeast is the Saccharomyces cerevisiae. It's just like, it's different variations of it, right? Bred it just like they've bred different lines of E. coli and stuff to do certain things naturally. Like, I mean, over the years, you know, before we even knew about, like, culturing stuff and, like, what yeast was, we did that. But it was originally isolated from the skin of grapes, and it sits along E. coli as one of the most extensively researched organisms because it's used in so much stuff. It's just, it's studied like crazy.
Okay.
But unlike E. coli, yeast is eukaryotic, And if you remember about the cells, the eukaryotic means that it has the nucleus and everything, unlike E. coli, where everything's just kind of floating around in there.
Right, okay.
Which does put it closer to us in, like, I guess, the chain of life. But it's still, it's in the kingdom fungi, so...
Right, because it's got a cell structure.
Yeah, it's a fungus, technically. So, like, it's different from us, but it is closer to us than bacteria is. And however different it is, it still shares a bunch of proteins that are important to our cellular function. And through that, they've discovered a bunch of different similar molecules, and they call them homologs, in yeast. And through that research, you know, we better understand, like, our proteins. It's crazy how they can, like, you know, look at this, like, this yeast and be like, oh, yeah, we have the same thing in our bodies.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah. Oh, we have X, Y, and Z, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, some of these proteins, like, controlled cell signaling, cell cycling, and enzymes used to process the proteins were discovered in Saccharomyces. So, like, a lot, like, basic things about cell, like, development and the way they work were found in yeast.
And it's pretty crazy, right? And I mean, at this point now, it's just a small element to what may be a part of a typical meal. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, you almost eat it every day.
A staple. I mean, it is exactly a staple to the typical meal, I guess I should say, yeah, really.
If you eat bread, you're eating that, almost guaranteed.
Right.
Or drink, you know, any alcohol or anything like that, pretty much anything, yeah.
And that's kind of where I started to realize it, too. I'm like, yeah, not only is it just bread, necessarily, but, like, breads, wines, beers.
So much stuff. It's crazy. Like, yeast blows my mind. Every time I make bread, I'm like, it blows my mind watching this yeast grow.
Yeast, bro.
Another one that blows my mind is called Chlamydomonas reinhardti. I think is how you pronounce that. I said it many times. And what this is, though, is green algae. So this...
Oh, no. Okay.
Yep. This is super important to the study of photosynthesis, right? Like, this algae, while it's not a plant, it does photosynthesize. It's actually a protist.
Okay.
A plant, algae is not a plant. But it photosynthesizes. It's crazy. And like when we talked about the life cycle of the earth, if you don't recall, algae is what created oxygen. If it wasn't for algae, we would not have oxygen on the earth.
Yeah.
And like it changed the whole entire world. It led to a mass extinction.
And I just like sushi. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Thank you. So...
But yes, the algae you're talking about is algae, but it's not.
Not the same. It is not the same. Right?
Yes, sorry. But no, you're right, though. I do love sushi, too, though. It's delicious. So this is widespread throughout soil and water. This is more the algae you see, like stagnant ponds and stuff like that, right? Think of that type of algae.
Mucky.
Exactly. And it's a single-celled algae, but it actually has two little flagella, or like tails almost, on it. And it can propel itself through the water with those little flagella.
So they're like little tadpole looking things, huh? Like under a microscope?
Kind of. Not really.
Like, well, just because you say the two... Oh, two tails, though. Never mind.
Yeah, they're like oval, green-shaped oval, like cells with like two little tiny strings coming out of the back of them, right? But these things, they can grow both photoautotrophically, meaning, you know, like photosynthesis, right? Photo, light,
right.
Auto, by themselves, trophic, meaning that's what they eat.
Okay.
But also phagotrophically, meaning phago, meaning eating.
The soda.
And again, yeah.
The soda.
Or, well, no, pH.
Rock and rye.
Yeah. Or phagotrophically,
I guess. No, rock and rye, right? They just guzzle. They're big ICP fans.
They're big juggalos.
Yeah.
They definitely are. But with it, like this algae, it's obviously easy to culture, right? Because it just grows like on crap you don't want it to grow on. Like you have algae grow on things out
there. Typically,
like, you
know, fish tanks.
A shady, right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's very easy to culture and it's very easy to manipulate genetically. So it's used a lot to, like I said, to study photosynthesis. It's also a good organism to show how cells can move with the flagella and how they respond to light too. And also cell recognition too. So like cells, when you're in a microscopic level, there's like a bunch of chemicals being released or, you know, signals and different things going on. It's like the microscopic level is so much different from the macroscopic. Like movements and forces that happen on our level aren't even felt a lot, you know, on that small of a level.
Right, yeah, because they're kind of like cordoned off all doing so many different things that like you wouldn't feel the leg move. It's just doing all the processes to have it happen, right?
Exactly. Or think about like the earth, right? The Earth is spinning around the sun and spinning in a circle, but you don't feel that at all, right? Think of it as in that way. Right?
That's a more apt. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. Like for them, like it's a whole new world, you know? It's also used to create biofuels and to be studied to make biopharmaceuticals too. So like this is like actually pretty important, man.
The next gen.
Yeah. So the next one, which, you know, like so far, right? The three things I've talked about, you know what these things are, right? These are things you've heard of.
Yeah, yeah, roughly. Right. Yeah, this, well, not roughly, yeah, but yeah, yeah.
This one you might not have heard of. You've probably heard of the name in a different reference, but it is called Hydra vulgaris, or commonly known as hydras. And this is a small hydrozoan in the phylum Cnidaria. And these things, when I was in invertebrate zoology, was one of the coolest things. Man, they're just the weirdest organisms. Have you heard of these at all?
I mean, you already set it up because you know that, like,
I mean, you might
the Hydra,
yeah,
of myth, mm-hmm. of comic book lore, of D&D, of magic. Right?
There you go. Like, yeah,
there's just so many different things that have incorporated the Hydra that it's almost impossible. I feel exactly. to have not. Heard of it.
And I think
and
it's
now
like,
Googling it, it just looks like
a crazy like worm coral looking
like
thing.
Prawn kind of spider thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you're right though, and I think they have that name because all the literature reference. You know, all the literature references right. because of that. Yeah.
Right. Does it predate it?
Well, yeah. I mean, like it's been around for it's a very ancient species. But the discovery
1758.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So, you know, it's they get kind of big, right? They're kind of like a cross between a jellyfish.
This black and white picture, I guess, yeah. makes me feel like it's a microscope.
I mean, they do. They okay. can be like when they're first like developing, they're pretty small. But like they get, you know, they're like a cross okay. between like a jellyfish and a worm. Kind of
10 millimeters,
exactly 10 millimeters. Like yeah. you know, they're pretty small, but you know they're still
they're not
with the naked
only
eye,
only under a microscope,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, but these things are crazy because the way that their stem cells are programmed, they're constantly being renewed, right? And this makes them essentially immortal.
Shut the f- up!
Like their stem cells are renewing their body all over.
Die.
Yes. So every 20 days, they are like completely replaced on average. You know, like every 20 days, their cells are completely replaced with brand new cells. And you can cut pieces of the Hydra off and it'll regrow into two new organisms, right? Or you can even take one of these things, put it in a blender,
Mince, and, right.
you know, turn that blender on, blend this thing up into slush, and it will regrow. Like that's how sturdy, I guess, these things are.
So like how much human growth hormone can we put into it? And human DNA?
All the HGH. All of it.
Oh man, I'm up for it.
No, I don't know. That's what they're studying for, right? Like essentially, like I mean, obviously that's what they're studying for. It's like immortality, right?
I'm ready.
But the next one though is the key to genetics. And I spent many a day in a lab knocking these things out and looking at them under a dissecting scope.
Okay.
And that is Drosophila melanogaster, also known as the common fruit fly.
Okay. All right.
When I think of model organisms, I think of these things. And they're really annoying, right? You know, you usually probably think of them flying around your old fruit.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would not consider these a model of anything besides nuisance.
Exactly. But they're so cool, man, because like if you actually study them, like look at them, it's crazy how you can study genetics with them. First of all, they share about 75% of the genes that we have.
Okay.
You know, so like they're 75% alike.
Okay.
You know, which is pretty crazy. You know, if you think about it, like these little tiny flies are 75% the same as we are.
You know what though? I always get the compliment from you that I'm not a dum-dum when it comes to the science, right?
Yeah.
And I will say that when you said 75% of the genes, I did not bat an eyelash. And I'm going to give myself a golf clap for that because like, that right.
You're like, of course, it's 75% of the genes. Why wouldn't it be? Yeah, they see, they move, they, yeah.
The number exactly. wasn't a factual thing for me, but I just know that, like, to be a carbon-based life form upon the Earth means that you got at least, like, 50, right? Like, come on, baby.
Exactly. And when we get into evolution, man, like, I will be able to tell all of you, without a shadow of a doubt, why evolution is true. And why it's the basis of biology through this episode. Like I said, Fruit flies, though, are perfect for genetic studies because they breed really fast and it's easy to change their genetics because of that. Like, you can isolate out, you know, a specific population of females and a specific population of males and put them together and then knock them out with either ether, CO2, or even you can, like, put them in the freezer for a little bit. Or there's this stuff called, I think, fly knock or something like that, or fly sleep, fly nap or something. I don't remember.
So, man. Wait, did you ever, like, low-key throttle it really low and just start getting them up first?
They can, like, get all drowsy and stuff when they first wake up. It's kind of, yeah. Like, seriously, what you do, you get these little, like, test tubes, right? And they have, like, you usually put a potato. Like, they like potatoes. If you ever want to get fruit flies, you could do this at home, too. Anyways, you grab some potatoes, you get, you know, get them on their potato, and then in this tube, you kind of tap the tube on the table really quick, which is knock them all down, you know, stop them from flying, put them all, like, down onto the bottom, and then you can, at that point, you can, like, open it quickly and maybe put, you know, whatever you have to knock them out or whatever. That's, you know, we would put this ether, I think we used, and then that would knock them out. And then after that, for like 10, 20 minutes, you know, you'd have like time. They'd still be alive, but they'd be asleep. You know, you anesthetize them, right?
Right, yes.
And then from that, you know, you take them out and you put them all under a microscope or a dissecting scope and you look at them. And they have all these different eye colors and the body shape, or not so much the shape.
Right, okay.
A little different differences in shapes, you know, in the wing shape and things like that. And those are all controlled by specific genes, you know, especially with the eyes, right? They see things with, like, vision and things like that, you know?
Really? Okay, okay.
Like, they have different color eyes and stuff like that. Like, you can have, like, a red eye or a yellow
eye. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
okay,
and, like, yes. I mean, but also, like, you know, you can be blind or whatever, or, like, yeah. I mean, I use those, like, in my lab, my genetics lab, when I took just basic genetics. Every lab, I think, was with fruit flies. We did, like, every week we did something with fruit flies. That was our labs there. So, like, right. That's how important they are as a model organism, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. So, the next one, though, is Caenorhabditis elegans, or C. elegans. You usually hear it, just like E. coli. And that is what you would probably know as roundworm.
Oh, okay. And,
yeah. Even though, like, yeah, this is a parasite. It's a very important parasite. It's about 1 meter long, and it's used to study the development of cells and their movement of the cells, right? It only consists of 959 cells. So, like, very little, you know, if you think about it. Yeah, not even 1,000 cells. And it has a life cycle of 3 days. So you can, again, breed it really quickly, and, like, you can tell, since there's only 1,000 cells, it's pretty easy to keep track of 1,000 cells. I mean, yes, 1,000, but compared to the billions of, or even trillions of cells in a human body, 1,000 is much, yeah. So, like, it's also transparent, too. So you can, like, see it develop, you can watch it form, you can watch it migrate and all that. And you can see the mechanics of the cell, too. Just from this little tiny roundworm, it's insane to think, like, it is a parasite, but it's also very important, you know. And it was actually the first multicellular organism to have its entire genome sequenced, because it's, you know, such a basic, because
it's 1,000 or under 1,000, but still, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Also, its connectome, which is like the neuronal wiring of it, you know, like the neurons of it.
Yeah. Brain. Yeah. Right.
So all the things I've talked about so far, which the rest except for one will be animals, but these have all been not plant things. You know, we haven't even talked about a plant yet, right?
No.
And one that is actually a model organism that I didn't list, but is tomatoes. But the one that is, like, a good fast-growing plant, like, again, you want some of this, does generations quickly, right? Is Arabidopsis thaliana, also known as thalecress. And you probably know what this plant is. You've seen cresses, for sure. They're just like weeds. If you look at pictures of it, you'd be like, oh yeah, I've seen things like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thalecress itself, though, is only found in Eurasia and Africa. So, you know, our Europe listeners, and hopefully soon African listeners, we have yet to have some African downloads, you wouldn't be more familiar with it. But cresses in general are, like, a very common plant that you see, you know, throughout the world.
Like a clover.
Yeah, it's more like a clover, like a clover-looking plant, right? Yeah. Is that more what you
think? I see like a tiny, tiny daisy or something like that.
Yeah,
I guess,
it's
right?
Like a very, you know, dainty looking plant. Because these are, like, small. Yeah. They're small plants. Like, it's a
this
weed,
one
right?
I see does look kind of familiar. A little
yeah,
bit,
when
yeah.
I see it, I guess, like, it is, like, it's, I don't know. I wouldn't even say it's like a clover. Because, like, it's like
it's like a thistle.
It's like a thistle. Yes, exactly. Because like cress is such a big type of plant. You know, like that, right. that category. There's different types, but this one specifically.
Right, right.
Yes, but it's very small, and it actually belongs to the mustard family. So like the mustard family. Oh, okay. If you the mustard family also contains broccoli, kale, kohlrabi, cauliflower, cabbage, and there's another one. That's all from the same mustard.
Artichoke?
No, not artichoke. But no. No, mustard, like, is crazy. Like, we took, like, a bunch of, like, a one plant made all of those just from selecting
right. things.
So, but this plant, though, it grows very fast and it's small, like I said. And it allowed scientists to be able to see, like, different genetic studies for plants. Through this, though, this is the plant they use to, like, study a lot of, like, genetic things with plants. Like, they'll use it to, like, alter its genes and stuff like that with different, you know, GMOs and stuff. All that. All the GMOs. That people are afraid of, yeah.
Right.
The last two, well, actually are two groups that I kind of grouped together because, like, they are, like, kind of the model organisms for, I guess, amphibians and fish, I would say. And that one is Danio ririo, I think is how it's ririo, maybe. Danio ririo, which is zebrafish. You can get it at your local pet store. And Xenopus laevis, which is the African clawed frog. And these two are both used to study like freshwater ecosystems, and they're really useful in studying the development and toxicology and like neuroscience of those, you know, of fish and of amphibians. They grow quickly, right? Especially the zebrafish is very good to see because like the roundworm, it's transparent, especially when it's young. And so you can see like its organs and everything develop. And that's kind of cool. Like, I mean, even if you have like a zebrafish at home, you know, you can see its organs. If you look at it like closely, you can see its stomach and its lungs and everything. It's pretty cool. Or not lungs, sorry, its gills. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry. But the last one though is one that I kind of want to do a whole like episode on. So I didn't really want to cover it much. And that is guinea pigs, mice, and rats, or Cavia parcellus musculus, or Rattus norvegicus. These three are obviously, you know, they're the lab rat or the guinea pig,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're long used for lab trials. And like I said, I want to cover them in their own episode because, like, they deserve their own episode. Like, they definitely do.
Yeah, for their sacrifice.
Yeah, like, seriously, they're used for so much stuff, man. And I almost worked at, I'm not going to say the company, that I would have been doing dissections and stuff. And I'm so glad.
Yeah, fuck that. I get it.
But yeah, so like all those organisms, like they're super important for scientific study. And I just wanted to give it like a basis, kind of like how you wanted to give with Newfound Glory, a basis of punk and what's going to come in future episodes. I wanted to give a basis of what's going to come in future episodes, not just with evolution, but a few other things, right? You know, like I said, with the mice and everything. Model organisms are so important, and I dealt with them so much during my schooling and everything that I thought that it'd be a good subject for you to know about and our audience to know about, for sure.
I know, and I appreciate it. And like you said, for the sacrifice to, like, to be able to kind of get the skinny on the guinea, I guess. You know what I mean, though? Like, I know that you had it on the list for a while, and I'll be honest, like, at first I didn't even think about the lab use. I was kind of like, all right, yeah, that's interesting. And when you started listing off the genius, I was like, oh yeah, it's related to capybara, yeah. Right? Like, it's a mm-hmm. descendant of it, right? So, like, I definitely am kind of interested in getting a whole...
Yeah. We'll talk about capybaras on their own, too. Yeah, they're awesome.
Do it.
But yeah, that's the model organisms. And I hope this was a model podcast episode for you guys. And so, yeah, Kyle, take us on out.
And with that, you can find us on our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and on Patreon, where you can get uncensored episodes.
Holy shit!
Give us a rate and review on your podcast platform of choice. It helps us find new listeners, and it helps the show overall and in general. For Brad, I'm Kyle, and we will see you again here soon.
See ya.
Blamity blam!
Do you think, like, the organisms ever, like, you know, they, like, set them up as, like, models, you know? Like, they dress them up and walk down to, like, a runway and stuff? Right.
That's it. Yep, little rab rats doing blue steel.
Mm-hmm.
Brain Soda.